Yeah. So my talk today is about two more or less loosely correlated issues, because the first one was mainly dedicated to asteroids. I did this as a diploma thesis in Heidelberg, and the second topic is just ongoing in collaboration with Shigerida. And since I rely for this topic mainly on lab experiments and asteroid families, I choose just this snapshot of a lab experiment. It's not so good because these are high-speed experiments, and it's rather difficult to take photos of these events. So what you have here was just a sphere, something like 30 centimeters or something, hit by a rather fast projectile here from the top just down. And what you have here are just the fragments just spreading around. And of course, for lab experiments, you have a rather easy distinction between target with just here at rest, waiting for the projectile, with just a small piece of metal to hit it. For asteroids, it's a different thing. There you don't have such a natural distinction between a projectile and a target. And if I'm referring in the next few slides to projectile and target for an asteroid, I only mean that the projectile is a smaller asteroid, that's all. So first I introduce some technical terms that I'm going to use and that are rather common to describe what happens if two bodies collide in a lab or in an asteroid belt. Well, okay. And the first measure of such an event is you just look what is the largest fragment after both bodies collide, assuming that the one body is negligible. And you have just the mass of this largest fragment, ML, or the dimensionless ratio normalized to the mass of the target. And just if it's so badly damaged that I have only a largest fragment that is less than one half of the body, I refer to this as fragmentation, and the rest is just cratering. It means I remove less than one half, something like 10%, whatever. What is a rather central issue is the energy per volume S, which yields the removal of 50% of the target. And this is without recumulation. That is just due to the fact that it's this way easier to compare lab experiments and asteroids, because you don't have any reaccumulation in the lab experiment.
50% is a hell of a crater, isn't it?
Sure, definitely, yeah. So this is just to have some fixed measure of the strength of the body, just one half. This is, of course, nothing but a crater. And
further on, why this is energy per volume rather than per mass, which would be like more?
It's just a factor of the density. So right. Of course you can just so that depends on the purpose. It's just convention to use the energy per volume. But of course, you can just turn it into energy per mass without any problem. Sure.
It probably matters because the stiffness of the body matters. We are talking about solid bodies, and so the energy.
So at least this is purely convention to choose the energy per volume. So this is nothing.
Energy per mass would be called Q. Or
yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah.
So
it's just the factor of rho that you have. And then is what we have. We have, of course, some dissipation of energy during the impact. And to measure this, we have the energy partition coefficient. And this factor of 2 arises from the energy equipartition between target and projectile. So one half goes into the target, one half into the projectile. I can just look what is left from my kinetic energy. And so if I want to have a closer look what was going on, I can refer to these fragment size distributions. So there's no deep difference between these two. The main difference is just use this for asteroids and this for lab experiments, because the diameter is derivable from observations. In lab experiments, easier to weigh the fragments. And you just use distributions like this, because this way it's easier to obtain a complete distribution, because you're only limited down to the small size. It's easy to be complete in the limit where all the large fragments are. And what is pretty difficult is this velocity distribution. Even in lab experiments, where you can just look at all fragments just flying away from the impact site. it's difficult to measure the 3D velocity of the fragments. Therefore, you need two cameras. You need to identify the same fragment on each pictures. So this is not so easy, and therefore it's rather difficult to calculate and to measure. If one conducts these experiments and one looks at asteroid families and try to derive some closer numbers from this, one gets a couple of experimental results, more or less combined with the theory. And I will not deeply comment on this formula, how to derive this. It's mainly some assumptions on scalings and time scalings that belongs to such a collision. What is rather interesting is that you have two components. One is decreasing with the body size, and one is increasing with body size. So this is, of course, due to gravity of the increasing self-gravity of the target. And this is just due to the fact that the larger a body gets, the more probable it is that there are flaws and cracks inside that weaken the body. And what is just to have a look on this. And this is just the formula I showed a second ago, plotted over the radius of the target. And just as a comparison, you have here the energy that I need to remove one half of the target mass just due to gravitation. That means I do not need to break up the body, I just need to remove one half. And if you have dissipation, something like 10 to 1% of the kinetic energy is left, then this line here shifts up. And this determines where the transition between breakup and reaccumulation is. So that means if a body is smaller than something like 1 to 10 kilometers, I just need to break up one half and I don't need any additional energy to remove it. But if the body is larger than something like 10 kilometers, I mainly have to impart energy to remove the mass. And then we're going on with the largest fragment. We have two limits, one of the cratering case. That means removed mass is just proportional to the, more or less proportional to the kinetic energy of the projectile. And the second one is the cratering case. And it's rather easy to connect them. And well, this choice is more or less a standard choice because everybody uses it, but indeed it's also a reasonable choice, just to have a fixed number to make it easier to compare it to other works. The fragment size distribution is a rather critical thing. What if you're just looking at fragment size distribution, looking at asteroid families and lab experiments, it's somewhat like a power law. You're just making a log-log plot and it's more or less a straight line. And you make such an approach and there are only two parameters left that are free. And I have two conditions. One is that means the size distribution need to contain the whole mass of the target. And the second one is that my largest fragment is indeed the largest fragment. And therefore, I can get rid of these two parameters. This is rather interesting because there is no deep physics inside these two conditions. And that is the reason why this size distribution is so common. You just have two parameters, two conditions, and you know everything about the collision. You think you know everything about the fragment size distribution. I will comment on this later. So it's just some simple approach. It's not so difficult. And if you just do the calculus, then it's B equals 1 minus FL, the fraction of the largest fragment, and C is just ML to the B. And energy partition coefficient is something like 1% for lab experiments. For asteroid families, one can argue something like up to 10%. And velocity distribution, that is, as already reported, rather difficult to measure from lab experiments. You can make some estimates from asteroid families, and then you may get the impression that there's some mass dependence of the velocity, where K is something between 0 and 1/6. But this is just more or less a trend, not an exact formula, let's say. So what you have to include is some mass dependence of the velocity.
One thing, because I think there is some amount of physics in the assumption that there is a scale-free power law. That means that you don't have any other preferred scale than the ML problem. Otherwise, yeah. I mean, that is somehow physics.
Yeah, somehow. But there are additional constraints that are missing here. So this is the point.
What's the issue about the material?
Excuse me?
For the small sizes, in deriving that experimental power law, what's the issue about the material?
In lab experiments, oh, this is you have a wide range of materials you use. That depends mainly on the purpose. Main material is something like basalt, mortar, something like this. And if you try to simulate hyperbolic objects in lab experiments, something like ice, there's a huge amount of materials you can think of. And the main problem is that you are not able to compare these different experiments in a rather easy way. So what you have nearly everything, something like rock and even water ice. So it's a huge range that you try to examine in that experiment.
So for the value that you use here, like
0.24? This is something like, it's rock, normal rock, yeah. Something like basalt, yeah. So, and since especially this point here is not so clear whether it's a good approach and a good approximation, and since there is still the rare accumulation not included in all this here, so we are just dealing with lab experiments or something, I try to do better and to develop some kind of own small fragmentation model. And it's a semi-empirical model, so just a few words on what semi-empirical means. It is not a calculation based on first principle, and in fact, it's rather difficult to do these simulations because you have to include the breakout of all these bodies, so you don't have just some equation of state relating pressure, temperature, density. But you also need to include something like the creation of flaws and cracks inside. It's a pretty difficult task to do these first principle calculations. And if you do this, and it's often difficult to reproduce just a whole range of lab experiments or asteroids. So you have them to tailor especially for a certain task. So what I need to is to gauge my model in some way to these known results or these simulations. And of course, if there's some change in the input of my parameters, it's easy to adapt, and it's pretty fast compared to such dedicated SPH simulations. And how get I started? Well, the first thing is just look at these pictures from lab experiments, and just, you can just say, use common sense. And you see that the tiniest fragments are more or less located near the impact site over here, and the largest fragments are somewhere over here. Just because the hugest amount of energy is dissipated near the impact site. And this is just the ansatz I've chosen, nothing special about it, just assuming that the size of the fragments increases somewhat with the distance to the impact site, where CNN is dimensionless. What you can think of is that N somehow controls how the energy is dissipated. Large N means that most of the energy is rather dissipated near the impact site, and the rest of the targets is more or less unaffected, where small N means more or less the whole target is equally shattered into pieces, and C somehow controls the strength. So using this approach, you even can set up an integral and do some analytical calculations to calculate your size distribution. But in the range where you just have small fragments, it's not so accurate. So what I've done is to use a grid, just divide this whole target into small grid cells, and then using an algorithm that calculates the fragments. And what I use the following. So what I can do first is just calculating something like the average particle fragment number per volume, and then just make this case distinction. If the average fragment per my small grid source is larger than one, then I'm not able to resolve actually the fragments. And I just label this as unresolved. If I have less than one fragment per cell, I just check whether L is larger than 2R, and that is obviously impossible. That is, if there are fragments that are larger than my target, and then I label this cell as intact, that means it's not damaged, it belongs to the intact part of the body. If it's smaller, I'd use a random number equally distributed between 0 and 1, and if z is smaller than n bar, then I label this as the center of a new fragment. And why do I this? In doing so, I just label a number of these smaller grid cells that are rather equally distributed to the number of fragments I would get. And the non-labeled cells are assigned to the nearest center, which is just a Ronoid decomposition. And this yields rather simple fragments because you don't have any complex shapes of fragments, just something like sphere-like, ellipsoidal-like things. And this is just, I talked a lot, but this is the easiest way is just to look on a picture, what I've done. What you have here is the target, and you see all these small, tiny grid cells building up the target. Here's the largest fragment. What you see here are just the borders between all the fragments, the indeed Ronoid polyhedra here. And for this calculation, I just used n equals 3, fl equals 0.04, and 60 times 60 times 60 cells. So up to now, it's just something like a playing around. There's no physics behind it. I just use n, my c accordingly to this fl, and I can just make these interesting plots. That's all. And before I follow with the second plot, I just describe how to get physics in it. Actually, it's not so complicated. What I need as input is, of course, radius r, density of the target. I need some model for the impact strength. What I, of course, need to know the projectile energy and my energy partition coefficient. The exponent n, as I already said, is something like the manner that energy is dissipated in the target. And I regard this as a material property just by comparing it to a bunch of lab experiments. It's quite justified to do so. And then I have only one parameter c left. And this I use to control the size of the largest fragment. It's just a function of LFL, and n is fixed. And FL is just used, I just use this combination of the already mentioned results to calculate this FL. So I just connect the cratering limit and the fragmentation limit at epsilon equals 1. That means that I just extend the cratering limit up to 50% mass removal. And this is indeed possible and justified by lab experiments. The cratering limit is even a well approximation for 50% mass removal. And I just use an energy partition coefficient to calculate my fragment energy. And here are just two lab experiments, something like 20 centimeters objects. And what we've plotted here is fragment mass over target mass. So here's the largest fragment located here, something like 0.06. And we have here a larger 0.69. What is plotted here, this B minus FL. Something like up to, I think the largest one, 50 centimeters.
Okay, and so the projectiles are really small.
Excuse me?
So the projectile is very, very small?
Something like a couple of centimeters, up to 1-2 centimeters. So you can really neglect the projectile.
Yeah.
And then it's often just made of metal just because you shoot it on the target. And it's not possible with the this projectile is made of water ice or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what you see here is just the already mentioned power law. We have these two free parameters and these two conditions you need to fulfill. And well, for small, if the largest fragment is rather small, it's a pretty good approximation. But the larger your largest fragment gets, it's where it gets worse and worse. And you can also do this comparison with the model just for asteroid families. You have there, you have a couple of problems. One is you don't have really control what FL is. You can estimate it in some way. And you have collisional evolution of the fragments afterwards. So the size distribution of an asteroid family is time dependent. So therefore, I just omitted these plots.
So what kind of aim would you have? A low
Excuse me?
What kind of values for aim would you choose for asteroids?
So from my comparison, something like 3 to 4.
Okay.
It's roughly the same. And what is still missing for asteroid families, which is very important, is to include reaccumulation. That means that some of the gravitation, some of the fragments are gravitational bound to each other, enlarging the largest fragment. And therefore, I need, of course, some kind of initial conditions for n-body calculations. I know what my fragments are, where they're located, but I don't know how fast they are, where they are moving. And I'd use, of course, it's a semi-empirical model, so I have to assume something. And it's not so easy to know what one should use to model the fragment velocity. So you used a huge bunch of different approaches. One is, of course, a pretty simple one, just that equal velocities for all fragments is rather crude. Then introduce some mass dependence of the velocity, introduce some scattering, and again some scattering. And to calculate the absolute value of the velocities, I just use my known kinetic energy of the fragments, just to rescale the velocity as I need it. And what was rather surprising for me, that's a huge family of different velocity models. They are pretty similar concerning these three here. So if I'm just looking at the size of the largest fragment, then these different simulations here are rather similar. The only approach that is pretty different is the first one. And luckily, this is just an approach that is pretty unreal, because all velocities don't have the same velocity. They don't have this. So from this point of view, I was rather lucky, because there's no need to have such a close look. All that you need is you have to use the correct kinetic energy, and in some ways some scattering. So even if I have mass dependence or no mass dependence on velocity of the fragments, it's not a huge impact. What is too crude is just to set the same velocity for all fragments. And of course, what is then left to do is just doing a numerical integration. So we have just gravitational interaction. And of course, there are some additional collisions between the fragments just flying away. And therefore, I use a simple model, no rotation, spherical fragments, and no further fragmentation. This is pretty well justified, because they are all moving from far from the impact side with more or less same velocity. The restitution parameter is not so critical. 0.6, 0.7, 0.9 more or less yield the same results. All that you need is some dissipation of energy to get these rubble piles settled. And as an analysis, I just look what fragments are gravitationally bound to find these rubble piles. And for two bodies, I just checked whether they are in a stable Keplerian orbit around each other. So this. Mainly done this to check whether I'm able to reproduce Antiope-like asteroids, which is, Antiope is a binary asteroid, part of the Themis family, something like two bodies, 100 kilometer size, orbiting in a orbit wide, I think something like 200 kilometers. And this is rather likely that an asteroid collision producing the Themis family just produces this asteroid. Because it's rather difficult to create such a system, including such a huge amount of angular momentum. It's not so difficult to produce asteroid binaries with a rather large mass ratio, just something like ETA and ECT2. That's not so difficult, but it's a rather hard job to reproduce a binary with rather two huge equal mass components. So, and what I'm now working on, and this is just a pretty short introduction since I got the first results only a couple of days ago, is to study planetesimal coagulation with numerical integration. What I'm using is M-body 6 in the parallel version. Hermit scheme is to be implemented. I'm working on this. And the main thing of the Hermit scheme is that it's time symmetric. So just do a particle prediction, you need to know X0, V0, A0, time derivative. And you do then the Hermit step and iterate this. So that means you're just recalculating the predicted values of the acceleration and time derivative. It's pretty easy to see in this formulation that the time step is time symmetric. What is additional to NYD6 is we have a neighbor scheme. That means we split the force in two components, one g to the near neighbors, which is rather fast fluctuating, and another regular component g to distant particles and the central force. it means that I can reduce the number of full force calculations to save computational time. This is pretty efficient for stellar clusters, and in the case of planetesimals, it's a bit less efficient, but up a factor of 3 or so you gain in computational speed. And I'm using too the Kristenheimer-Stiefel regularization for the integration of close two-body encounters. It's a rather nice framework to detect collisions.
May I add some more historical note, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
Since some people are not familiar with this, because most, I would say, since maybe 95 or so, most of the people like Hukubu and Ida and also other groups who are simulating this kind of planetesimal agglomeration use relatively simple code, especially the Japanese, because they have the brake. The brake is so fast that it delivers a lot of force calculations in practically zero time, so you don't need to take care about the good code. So that they use what Sverdrup would call N-body 4 in some version with the improved time symmetry in the integrator. That means that basically at the smallest intervals, you always compute full forces every time. And for a long time, it has been known that more clever schemes, like the Ahmad-Cohen-Neighbor scheme, there are others, but this is one of them, require, if you do it on one processor, they require only maybe 1/10 or 1/20th the number of total force calculations. So on one CPU, they are 10 or 20 times faster for the same problem. But the problem is they are not good to work together with brain, for example. And this is Patrick's task now, really. This NBody 6++ is very well parallelized, and it uses the Ahmad-Cohen-Neighbor scheme. And maybe we could even use it with some distributed form of grape. The bottom line of all is we think that we can reach about 10 to 100 times the particle number, which is possible with the present NBody 4 codes.
We have a nice
central body
in the calculation.
Yes. So, and I said that I just obtained the first results a couple of days ago, and it's just more or less a test calculation using 1,000 initial, 1,000 bodies as initial conditions, using perfect mergers of the bodies using 10 times enhanced body radii, and I just compared this to a paper of our collaborator. Since it's practically the same range in semi-major axis space, of course, you have 4 times more bodies used than in this calculation. But indeed, it's rather more or less, and let's say the trend is okay. So,
just say what is plotted
there. Sure, excuse me. Oh, it's unreadable. Okay. What you fear is a semi-major X, excuse me, yeah, pretty, it's pretty unreadable. It's here semi-major axis ending eccentricity of the bodies after 10,000 years. This is rather equal to this calculation here. So we have two, here the semi-major axis and eccentricity. And what we have here are just 4 larger objects that are by far larger than 1 to 10 to the minus 8 in units of solar masses. So I will not deeply comment on this. It's just the first result we obtained with the modified code. And then I just, an additional thing is to have rather closer look on the collisions, and I will comment on this more deeply, because just plotting the specific energy per volume involved in all these collisions here over the critical energy per volume assumes solid bodies. So you can only do this if these bodies that are here colliding are indeed more or less solid things. But it's rather likely that these bodies here are more or less rubble piles. But even they are rubble piles, you have enough energy to break up the components of these rubble piles. What you have here more or less two groups of bodies. Here are the runaway bodies that are large enough to be rather stable against collisions. And you have here a set of rather fast planetesimals, speeded up due to close encounters with larger ones. Yeah. Well, excuse me. Sure. So what we have here is the specific energy in such a collision over the critical energy that you need to break away 1/2. And what we have here is just a time scale in orbits or years, as you would like to put it. But this is all ongoing. It's just a couple of days old. So, yeah?
Yeah,
Now, using F equals 10, I think if I understand that, that's their notation for increasing
the yeah.
of all the objects artificially by a factor of 10.
Yeah.
So the cross sections are
yeah.
bigger.
Yeah.
So the encounter velocities are going to be much lower
yeah.
in simulation, in yours and in
yeah.
Anita's,
yeah.
than in the real,
sure, it was,
the real system.
So, the,
so how will that, how do you think that will affect, if you were to do the real system that
yeah.
they're trying to do and that ultimately you're going to do,
yeah.
do you think that most of those collisions would be disruptive or at least producing large amounts of fragments every time?
I can't comment on this yet because we're just in the step on working on this. I just used the factor of 10 to make some rather quick calculation for this.
Sure.
Sure.
I think you should be a bit more brave about this because this is the real idea behind this.
Yeah.
We think that
yeah.
we increase the particle number more and more because we want to go closer to the real particle size.
Yes.
And then the problem comes up that for the small end of the mass distribution, we have high impact velocities.
Yes.
So fragmentation is first important for the mass distribution, but it's also important for the velocity distribution, and this is important for oligarchy growth, so
I know
the characteristics. So this is what we are after.
Yeah.
He's just in his first year of the PhD, this is so
it's
just
so this is
first results coming out.
So this is we are all ongoing, and with it I want to conclude. Yeah.
Closely, you mentioned that the velocity a couple of transparencies ago when is 1 over m to the 1/6. Can you motivate that for me? I don't see it.
What? Okay, just sure. No problem. So you mean this one here?
Yeah.
So this is at least if you just look at asteroid families on Lebesgue primates and you try to derive something like a more or less velocity dependence on the fragment mass or on the asteroid mass, then you get something like an exponent between 0 and minus 1/6. It's just, I just choose the extreme case.
Okay, so this is experimental.
Yeah.
Okay.
At least you can say a combination of arid lab experiments and asteroid families. Since you can try to learn from today's asteroid families, they're believed to be a result of a breakup.
It's empirical and you're fixing it in a certain
yeah.
fraction.
Yeah. 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 So this just to have a fixed number, I just use 1/6. Yeah. Okay.